Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Cult I Left Behind podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Briggs, and I'm here to tell you my stories of growing up in the IBLP cult, which you might know from the Duggar family.
And I'm your other host, Kyle Briggs. I am Amanda's husband, and I have not heard most of these stories before, so stay tuned and we'll all get traumatized together. Alright, welcome back to the next episode. This week we are going to pull the thread from something we were talking about last week, which was Amanda being so highly prepared for her military career. And I just thought it was like super interesting, like the similarities there. And we didn't talk about this in between episodes. So we're just like going cold turkey into this. But like what part of like growing up in the cult do you feel like prepared you the most, or what are some things that
oppression, Kyle?
How so?
Screaming, yelling. Well, like, do we just start at the very beginning?
Sure.
So MEPS, the military entrance processing, it's very strict and regulated. And
that's like, your like medical thing, right?
Mm-hmm. The medical. But they're screening. Also testing other stuff. You have to do an academic examination, and they like check to make sure you can read and other stuff.
And like a physical fitness test, right?
Not physical fitness, but you have to, well, at the time, I don't know what the current standards are, but you had to meet certain physical criteria. Mm-hmm. And it was just very regimented, and people got kicked out of there all the time for the dumbest stuff because they just didn't read the instructions properly. But diligence, Kyle, is a character quality. Oh. So, and attentiveness. So I never had any problems with that. But I realized my very first day of officer training that I was going to be just fine. Oh, yeah. Okay, so we arrive. And, oh, there was actually a hurricane. So they allowed us, anyone who was going to, like, travel through the path of the hurricane to get to officer training school, we could get there as many days early as we needed to be safe. So I was going to drive right through the path of the hurricane. So I got there several days early. Being me, you know, you find some of the cadre and start getting the scoop on, like, what to expect. And, you know, I read a lot, and my ex-husband had been through OTS. When I say OTS, that's officer training school for all of our civilians. And so I had a pretty good idea what to expect, but knowledge is power, Kyle. So always more knowledge. So let's see. The day it all started, so a couple days go by, hurricane stuff, everyone gets there. And it's like go time. So generally what would happen is if there hadn't been a hurricane, we all would have arrived and they would have like in-processed us all at the same time. Mm-hmm. But they kind of knew some of us already because we were already there. So we'd been staying in the dorms, those of us who arrived early, and the cadre, when I say cadre, that's the folks who lead officer training school and they're your instructors. They had come around and told us like, all right, be out in the quad for in processing at whatever time and don't come any earlier than that. We're all like, okay. So I'm in the dorm. There's another cadet with me and we just hear the screaming start. And I'm like, oh, this feels like home. We walk out there at the time and I see a member of the cadre, you know, with the bucket hat, like making a beeline for me and this other cadet. And she was scared and she like kind of hid behind me. And I was like, this is very normal. I'm used to being charged at and yelled at. So I don't know. Like it didn't even occur to me that it like was anything other than normal, which is weird now that I think about it. So this drill instructor comes up and he's like screaming and spits flying. Why were you out here earlier? Why didn't you blah, blah, blah? Well, you know, you have to make your reasonable appeal, Kyle. Like, I know all about this. So I just stood there quietly, let him scream at me. I think like got spit all over my face. And I was like, cool, I'm in. Like that's when it's official, you know, when there's spit on your face. And so I waited for him to stop yelling. And then I was like, well, so-and-so told us not to come out till this time. And he was like, oh, okay, well, go over there. Stand up straighter. You know, whatever. Like, he had to yell at us for something because you're always wrong until you need to start being right at whatever phase in training. So we get in line and they're just up and down. Tie your shoelaces. Why aren't you standing straighter? And just like anything they can find to pick on you. They're screaming at you and they're like up in your face, like, I don't know, yelling at you. But like, I remember standing in that line on the first day and going to myself, they're not allowed to hit me. No one here is allowed to hit me. This is going to be great.
It's a big difference.
Like, no one here is allowed to hit me, and no one here is allowed to rape me, so I think I'm going to be okay. And they did. Like, it was a long day of waiting around in lines, but luckily, I had a lot of practice from Knoxville when we would have to wait forever for the bus line to take us to the other part of campus where the kids part was. So, I don't know, standing around in the heat, being bored and miserable was, like, pretty normal. And then they had to teach us how to march. And I will say that was probably one of the hardest things for me. I am not coordinated. And in the cult, like, we weren't totally marching. We would put our hands on the shoulders of the person in front of us, but, you know, we weren't marching to a cadence. So they start teaching you that day one. And it was just okay. I was fine. I was happy. I was so happy. Like, every minute of the whole thing, I was so happy, even when it was terrible. And, you know, there were certain things that we had to do that were difficult. Well, more so for me from, like, a coordination perspective, like flanking movements. I had to practice really hard. I turned it all into math problems in my head and practiced in my dorm room. And that's, like, how I figured out all of the movements for that, which is another story for another time, but there were some funny moments. But I think I drove the rest of my flight kind of nuts because I was just like chipper and happy the whole time. And they were all over it and sick of it. And a lot of them were prior enlisted. So they'd already been through BMT, the basic military training, which is what the enlisted folks go through. And I think they were all just over it. And I was like, this is the best. Like, yeah, they're yelling at me. But also no one's hitting me. And I did very well. I got one piece of paperwork. So they give you these little slips. I think they're called 431s, where they write up everything you mess up. And I don't really know what happens if you get a lot of them, because I got one. I failed to come to the position of attention when addressing a superior officer one time, which you don't do. In, like, the real military, like, after you leave officer training school, you can, like, walk up to people and speak words to them in a normal way. But when you're a cadet in training, you have to come to the position of attention anytime you talk to any of the cadre or anyone. Like, if it moves, you're at attention. So I was standing there with my flight. I was the flight leader that week. And one of the cadre came up and I forgot to come to the position of attention. I remained at parade rest. So I got one for that. And then I got one demerit on one room inspection because there was a piece of hair on the, like, suit jacket for my dress blues. And I was still, I kept that. I still have that piece of paper because that was, like, the only thing they could find. And, because, you know, they wanted it clean. What have I been doing since, you know, I could walk? Cleaning. So that was easy. Cleaning blind slats and grout in the shower and, like, white glove inspection has to be perfect. So it was perfect. What?
And so just for context for everybody else, because we haven't, you know, I know this stuff, but, like, so this was Air Force, OTS. You weren't prior enlisted.
I was not.
Straight as an officer. Did you notice that the other people weren't, or they were afraid, or, like,
oh,
they were,
my, like, roommate was straight out of college. She was 22. She cried on the floor most nights. So, and I was just, like, living my best life. So I really tried to, like, help her and support her and, like, take care of her when she was overwhelmed. I would clean her side of our dorm room and, like, pick up after her. And we eat. They have the dumbest rules because they're just trying to see how much like dedication and persistence and attention to detail you have. So we would have to dry out our sinks in the morning before we left our room. Like there could not be a drop of water in the shower or in our sinks. Wow. So yeah, I would like make sure her sink was dry and she'd be like, it's fine, just leave it. And I'd be like, that's not obeying the rules. Not how it works. But our room always did great when it was inspected.
Well, it's because you were cleaning her sink.
Well, yeah. So no, I think there were some people who were very overwhelmed. Like there were people who would cry. And I mean, I felt a little swindled because no one ever got in my face and screamed at me other than that one day, the first day. Like, I was expecting it to be way worse. But also, I like, they said, don't move. Look straight ahead. You're at the position of attention. Don't move your eyes. So, like, I just wouldn't move my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I'd stand still at the position of attention. And there would be people, like, looking all over the place. And it's like, they said, stand still and look straight ahead. Like, how hard is this? Apparently, that's, like, it's very hard for some people to follow strict orders. But to me, it was, like, a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And I felt so at home. I was, like, at peace. My nervous system felt so regulated. That's really scary. That being screamed at and being in an environment where, you know, people were screaming at each other was like so normalized to me at that time in my life. Granted, this was a while ago. I don't think being in an environment with people yelling would regulate my nervous system now, but back then it sure did.
I would have a problem with like not looking around, like the rest of like stand there, look straight ahead. Like that would be okay. But when someone's like doing something, you know, a couple people down and they're going to getting in trouble or yelled at, like I would have a hard time just kind of like not looking over to the side.
You just don't.
I mean, it's like a car crash.
But you just like, don't.
You have to look.
No, Kyle, you follow the rules.
No.
You obey the rules and you look straight ahead. See, you would have gotten so many pieces of paperwork. Mm-hmm.
So did you think you just didn't get yelled at because you were just like always following the rules?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think they loved me. Like there was one time I probably should have gotten paperwork because it was another time I forgot to come to the position of attention when addressing a superior officer. I think I remained at parade rest. Mm-hmm. And it was our squadron commander and he just looked at me and he was like, Cadet Rivers, you know better. I was like, yes, sir. I think that they all knew I had my shit together. Mm. I was doing everything I was told to do. Okay, here's the other thing. They had cameras all over the dorms, not in our rooms, but in all the hallways. Mm-hmm. And because I struggled to figure out all of the movements for marching, when we were released back to our dorms, I marched everywhere by myself, just practicing. And I would go around corners again and again and again until I got the facing movements right. So I think that they not only saw me busting my ass all day, every day in front of them, they saw me go back to the dorms and bust my ass there to like try to improve and fix what I wasn't good at and get really. I got so good at it, though. I was like, I called cadence really fucking well. And that week when I was a flight leader, so we all like cycled through being flight leaders. I was rated the top flight leader of the entire student body of hundreds of people. Mm-hmm. And I did DG that training as well, distinguished graduate. They picked the top 10%. So there are only a handful of us.
So did you, was anybody else doing that? Like, were they putting in the extra effort, like after the drills were over or whatever?
I'm sure some people were. I don't know.
You didn't see anybody else out in the hallway with you, I guess is what I was asking.
No. No. No, I think the staff liked me. Like, I was respectful. I followed the rules. I did my jobs well. I performed well on the written exams, and I performed well on all of the practical, like, leadership exams. Oh, and then they did this to us before we even got there. They sent us this prerequisite course. And they said, you know, study everything. There's going to be a cumulative exam when you get to OTS. What they didn't tell us was, you know, what would happen if you didn't pass? Like, would you get kicked out? Mm-hmm. This is an unknown, Kyle. So obviously we studied for it like we'd get kicked out, or at least I did. And I made, I think it was over 500 flashcards. I still have them. And I memorized all of them. And it wasn't like a simple little like one word answer on the back. It was usually like paragraphs and huge chunks of the Constitution and stuff. So I just memorized all of it. And of the entire student body, I think I was one of 12 people who passed it. Oh, geez. And I think almost everyone else who passed it was a prior enlisted member. And yeah, I passed that. I think, and that was early on. That was like week one or two. So I think that went a long way toward making the staff realize, or mm-hmm. the instructors realize, like, she's fucking serious about this. But yeah, I was a little pissed off when we take this whole cumulative exam and then they're like, oh, it's not going to impact the outcome at all. It's not going to impact your outcome at all. We're testing out new curriculum and you guys were our guinea pigs. We just wanted to see how you'd do. So, you know, have to be perfect. That's another way the cult helped me mm-hmm. with the military. Like, well, they gave me a test and I didn't know if passing or non-passing scores meant I got to stay or I was getting kicked out and going home. So you just study because you got to get an A.
So was there anything that happened in the cult or, you know, in your childhood that hurt you going through military school or like OTS or in your military career?
In my military career, yes. Okay. This is actually an assignment from my therapist. I'm one of the people who, if I accidentally say something weird, I will be up in the middle of the night 20 mm-hmm. years later thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So there was a thing that happened. We'll get to that. I think the primary way the cult harmed me in the military context is there was a lot I didn't know. A lot of innuendo, a lot of...
like slang and...
Yeah, I was just naive, mm-hmm. I think. And so I get to my first duty station and they like kind of take one look at me and put me in a very high visibility job. Mm-hmm. Because when you DG in training, like, congratulations, now you have to perform at that level for the rest of your career. So they saw that on my record at my first duty station, and I got put in a high visibility job while I waited for pilot training to begin. And I was working in an office for a wing commander, which is high up there in the Air Force structure. He was a full bird colonel who got his first star, so one star general, toward the end of his tour there. And he was an asshole. Oh my gosh. So I was like a junior executive officer. So executive officers are kind of like administrative assistants, but like on steroids and military and, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So this guy had two execs, and then there were a handful of us junior execs who like cycled through. And the primary exec was a major, and then his counterpart was a captain. So the major was the highest ranking person in our little hub of execs. And he would go into the office, into the colonel / one star general's office. And that guy, the colonel, would like lose his ever loving mind. And the poor major would just have to stand there and take it, you know, and like be professional and be mm-hmm. calm and not get defensive. But he would come out of those meetings looking like he was getting out of a boxing ring. Like, not like he'd actually been beat up, but like his demeanor, he looked so fucking defeated every time he came out of that office. So he had this phrase. I'm going to die talking about this. Okay. He had this phrase that he would say.
This is the major.
Yeah. Okay. When he came out of those horrible meetings. Oh, man, I just took a bunch of face shots. Being me, being very appropriate, being someone who, you know, was not raised around normal people mm-hmm. and their terminology, I took that very literally. And I thought he meant it was like getting punched in the face. Mm-hmm. So I started using that phrase after bad meetings.
Oh, no. I mean, you could definitely take it that way. I also, it would be a little different coming from a female.
Okay. So, like, I am the super appropriate person at work. People in the military were like, they would apologize if they cussed in front of me. Appropriate at work. I was always very professional. And I did relax over time, and I would drop some appropriately timed F-bombs in uniform. But especially for the first couple years, like, people didn't even know I cussed, which is really funny. If any of you listen to this, see, I cuss. So one day I was talking to one of my mentors, someone I really respect.
Someone else in the military?
Yes.
Okay.
A lieutenant colonel that I then sort of worked for. I forget where I was in the whole, like, I worked a lot of places on that base. And he asked me, I think he asked me about a meeting or something, or how something had gone, or I don't know. And I used the phrase face shots, and he didn't say anything, but he kind of, like, tilted his head, like, and then he just kept going. And I didn't know what that was about until, like, years later, years later. Somehow, I forget how, I find out what face shot really means to the rest of the world. And I've just been dying in a pit of hell.
I can imagine
that I created for myself ever since.
I can imagine you, that keeps you up every night, that you're like, I didn't know, but also here's the 900 times I said that unintentionally.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
But, like, who says that? Like, if he knew what it meant, the major, why was he saying that in the office? Because people suck. But also, he shouldn't have been saying that. But also, I had no idea what it really meant. So, yeah. Yeah, I was talking with my therapist about things that keep me up at night. She almost fell out of her chair laughing. And I was like, I guess it is kind of funny. Now, a long, long, long time later. But I would say, like, yeah, being a little naive or a lot naive, because I just had a whole swath of, like, I don't know, secular knowledge. Missing.
Growing as somebody who attended public schools, somebody who attended public schools, like, those types of innuendos and jokes and inside jokes and all that kind of stuff is, like, you're exposed to that a lot, whether you want to be or not. Like, you hear it, and, like, you pick up bad habits and phrases, and, you know, parents are always like, where did you learn that? It's like, you learned that in public school. So I can imagine, you missed that phrase or phase of life. and I know there's more of those stories. But if we go back to, so OTS, was there anything else that was, like, happening there, or that you kind of realized while in OTS with all these other people, like, hey, like, I'm different in this way, or, like,
give a damn never ran out.
I
don't know where that came from, but I think that was what set me apart from everyone. Like, I had an endless supply of give a damn, so I could hang in there, you know. Training is grueling, mostly from a lack of sleep. And yeah, like, one time we were, I think there was one day we marched for 11 hours. Wow. And that was in, like, 90 degrees, 1,000,000% humidity, Alabama. So there were days that were very physically taxing that way. But a lot of it's just having the mental endurance to keep pushing with the best you've got for an extended period of time. And OTS was 2 months, but then, like, my tech school, you know, those would be, like, 4 month pushes. And again, like, I graduated at the top of my class. I was the only distinguished graduate for that. And I think it's just because, yeah, I had kind of an endless supply of give a damn that I made from thin air because I was as tired as everyone else. I don't know if that had to do with the cult or if I was just so fucking excited to be there. And like, I had worked so hard and waited so long to get that career opportunity. Like, I just woke up so happy every morning, no matter how tired I was. I would say the early mornings, the cult gets you accustomed to those. Mm-hmm. 'Cause even like Knoxville and stuff from a young age, we were up and at it and in line for the buses and stuff while it was still dark outside sometimes. So the incredibly formulaic lifestyle was familiar mm-hmm. to me.
Well, you were probably used to like that very strict, like regimented schedule.
Yes. Yeah. Because anytime you, so at home is one thing, but also anytime you went to a cult event, it was incredibly regimented. Mm-hmm. And there were times you had to be places. And if you missed the bus, like you couldn't rejoin them later. You were stuck for the rest of the day with your parents on the blanket and doing blanket training, you know, we've talked about that in other episodes, but, yeah, it was very natural.
So you get through basic training and you head off to tech school. Mm-hmm. So now I imagine, and I haven't been in the military, so I don't know. Like, I imagine the days change, the yelling mm-hmm. changes.
They don't yell at you. Like,
everything probably changed at that point. How did that, was that good or bad for you? Like, it sounded like you were very comfortable at basic training and you were comfortable with kind of what was happening there.
Yeah.
Did it change at all when you went to tech school?
Well, I had a weird tech school experience in that I was supposed to be a pilot. I got, I actually went to a board, a selection board as remotely piloted aircraft only. That was a mission I was very interested in. People call it drones. Everyone in the military is like, no, drones, those are what we shoot down for target practice. Like, mm-hmm. these are massive aircrafts, and they have a very interesting mission that I was pretty invested in. For a lot of reasons. And so I was in that training pipeline when I got diagnosed with some really serious medical issues they blindsided me. So I stayed on what they call casual status, where you're given a job while you wait for training. So they kind of just put you wherever your skill set works and they need you. So I was a junior exec, and then I went over and I did kind of like consulting work for an aspect of the Air Force that really focuses on culture and doctrine. And, you know, they do like culture assessments and stuff. I helped with that. And then I helped with a national defense summit a couple times. And so I was still working, but I was like on pause from training while they figured out my medical condition. And I ended up having two surgeries during that time. And then after that, we decided, like me, my doctor, and my military leadership decided that the medical standards, the physical standards on the medical side, for being a pilot were just too stringent for what my body could do given my diagnosis. So I cross-trained into a different specialty. And that tech school was really fun. I loved it. It was heavily academic, very nerdy. And then after I finished up there, I had to do several more courses back at my duty station. And I mean, it was very different. We had to form up sometimes and we had to do unit PT and, you know, stuff like that, but it wasn't anywhere near as insane as OTS with, you know, screaming and yelling. Mm-hmm. Like the whole point, and this is very interesting as I think back on it from like I grew up in a cult perspective. They kind of try to make you feel like a prisoner of war in officer training school. Like your life gets stripped down to almost nothing. You know, you don't have access to electronic devices. You can't call your family or friends, at least for a while there. Eventually, as an officer, at least when I went through, you could earn those privileges. But it's a very stripped down way of living with you're constantly controlled, you're constantly oppressed. You know, they're running by it. You know, 5 a.m, banging on your doors, kicking them. Like you can see when you walk into the dorms, you see the scuff marks along the bottom of every single door from them, like banging on it with their boots and hammering on. Like they're trying to scare you. They're trying to get your heart rate up. They're trying to get your adrenaline pumping. They're trying to show you that you can do hard things. Ultimately is like kind of the educational goal of it, but also they're trying to recreate the fog of war. So all of the yelling and screaming and like all this stuff is to, in a way, simulate warfare, and make you think and react and make good decisions under pressure with a lot of noise and people yelling at you. And the stakes are really high and like you're going to get kicked out if you don't, you know, pass every element of not just the academic tests, but the field tests, like the practical part. And I guess something I realized is like the fog of war and growing up in a really oppressive environment have a similar impact on the brain. And your cognitive abilities and fine motor skills when, you know, your heart's racing and your adrenaline's pumping and stuff like that. I mean, when we did weapons, they made us shoot all day in like the blazing heat. And then when we were shaking, we did our actual test where we had to use firearms appropriately. The same thing like with combatives, so we learned kind of like a jiu-jitsu Krav Maga cross breed. And same deal, like out there fighting all day. They divided us by weight class and height. I'm super tall. So it was like me and one other woman with a bunch of dudes because we were all the same height. So you spend like a whole week wrestling and fighting, and then you have to, you know, you're shaking, you're tired, demonstrate the skill. And I found I just went into a zone of like, okay, I know how to cope with chaos. I know how to cope with feeling overwhelmed. I know how to cope with feeling scared. I know how to cope with everything around me being on fire.
Did it register that way? Like, did you actually have to put some effort into like being okay with the situation you were in, or was it just like
normalized? Oh my gosh. It was like putting on a glove that fit perfectly, which is sad, you know, but like, I don't have like blocked out memories of that time. Like I remember it with incredible clarity because the whole time, well, first of all, I was just so happy to be there. But secondly, I was like, I know this, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can be really good at this. I know this. I had already from a young age learned how to focus through pain, learned how to focus through being yelled at, screamed at. And I don't know, like almost every day in training, the thought would occur to me, how great is it that no one here is hitting me? Like, this is so cool. No one here is hitting me. Yeah.
So as far as like your happiness to be there, was that related to your childhood at all? Or was that like just pure, like, I want to be in the military happiness?
It was pure, I want to be in the military happiness. I mean, there was a lot going on during that time. I talked about this in the episode, 4 years in court, how everything with my brother's case went down during the 2 months I was in OTS. But even with all of that, I mean, I've never had 2 months in a row where every day I woke up and I knew I was exactly where I was supposed to be, mm-hmm. doing exactly what I was supposed to be doing and loving every fucking minute of it, even when it was awful. And I mean, there I had this this phrase I would say to myself, and it's helped me so many times in my life. And I'll tell you the phrase in a second here, but like, there were going back to I lack coordination skills. There were so many things we had to do that were very public, like how we handed off flags and like all this stuff that was very precise. You had to move your hands in a certain way or your feet in a certain way and do facing movements, and it all had to be just right. And I would see it coming, like I would see other people doing that and be like, oh shit, how am I going to figure out how to do this? And there are like hundreds of people watching right now. And if I mess it up, like we're all going to get screamed at because of me. I learned to just embrace it. I would tell myself, it's all going to happen. Everything you're afraid of is going to happen. And you're going to be okay. And indeed, every single thing I was afraid of doing in OTS did happen where I had to do it. And I had to do it under pressure and I had to do it under scrutiny. But I always lived. I always figured it out. 100% of the time, I figured it out and I got through it. And I don't know, well, I am sure actually that growing up in such a difficult, chaotic, oppressive, abusive environment hardened me in a lot of ways, or maybe a better way of saying that is made me very resilient, very mm-hmm. tough. And now, you know, in business or in my personal life, if there's something I'm afraid of, I just tell myself the same thing. I'm like, you know what? It's all going to happen. It's all going to happen to me at some point. And I'm going to make it and I'm going to be okay. And I think that that was something that dovetailed really well from like a mental health perspective between my time growing up in a cult and going into the military is like, I know into my bones that I can do hard things and that I'm a survivor. And that I can get through just about anything. But also, I found that I came out of all of those environments and I was still me. Like, I still had a heart. I still cared. I still had a few fucks in my field of fucks to give. And I, you know, I think it's important to focus on how horrible the cult is and how harmful and abusive and oppressive it is. And it's wrong. And we don't like cults, people. But it also made me who I am in a lot of ways. And I do appreciate that. I mean, I hate how I got these qualities. I hate that growing up in a really abusive cult made officer training school really easy because no one was hitting me even though they were screaming at me. That's legitimately tragic. But also, it could kind of come at me and I knew I was going to be okay. Because mm-hmm. pretty much absolutely nothing I've experienced as an adult was as bad as being raped and beaten all the time in a cult. So yeah.
So with that all being said, do you think, and your situation's very specific to you, and maybe not everybody in the cult had as bad of a time as you did mm-hmm. within your biological family. But how well or poorly do you think like other cult kids would do in the military?
Oh, I think they'd be great because, you know, I've talked to other people who maybe they didn't grow up in a cult, but they grew up in a really physically abusive environment. Mm-hmm. They will say the same thing as me, like, people yelling all day, whatevs, man, like, yeah. Come at me, bro. No one's hitting me here. And they could function very well in that fog of war environment as well, because mm-hmm. they were accustomed to it. If yeah. you're accustomed to screaming and yelling all the time, like, it's not going to faze you. Mm-hmm. It's really not going to faze you. You're going to be like, oh, there's spit on my face. Huh. that's only happened 100 times before, you know, or 1,000 times before. Again, it's kind of sad, but it was so not a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's sad that it sounds like, you know, people that come from abusive backgrounds would actually do very well, or they would acclimate well to the military. Maybe that's the best way of putting it. Like, it's not going to be as traumatic for them.
No, it's not.
Because they've already been traumatized by that stuff, and it's not going to register.
Okay, and then my flight commander, I think this was pretty fucked up. I had to explain that I had, you know, the sexual assault case against my brother pending, and we talked about that in 4 years in court in that episode. But my leadership at OTS ended up knowing a bit about my history, and I forget how my flight instructor found out, but he knew I was a strangulation survivor. So that week of combatives, one thing you learn is how to choke someone out. And how to protect yourself if someone is choking you out. So my flight commander selected me to be the person he taught everyone else on.
Well, you were the guinea pig.
Yeah. So he choked me out to the point where I like almost blacked out. I think it was like 13 times or something, teaching it. And I found out later he did it on purpose to see if I'd break. I think that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
For the record, I didn't break.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up. So I wanna go back. So you're in tech school. So growing up, going through this ATI curriculum, like what was happening? Like when you get into like an actual, I mean, you had already been through college at this point.
I had been through grad school as well.
Yeah, so maybe this wasn't.
Well, it wasn't my field. So a 3-star general picked the career field I went into after being a pilot. He wrote the letter that redirected my career. And it was a STEM field, which I have no background in. Like, nada. So that was a huge learning curve for me. And I was in class with, like, actual astrophysicists, like, not at all intimidating. And everyone in there except like me and I think maybe one other person, she might also have had a STEM degree. I think I might have been the only person in my class who didn't have a STEM degree. So I got up at 4 a.m. and studied and until it was time to go to class. And then I went to class and then I got dinner and studied until like sometimes 10 p.m. was an early night, sometimes midnight, slept as much as I could, got up, studied. And I took breaks. Like I would go hang out with my classmates sometimes, usually on the weekends. I would give myself a break. But yeah, I just had to really apply myself to make that transition into that career field. And it was another situation where I learned, okay, I can do other categories of hard things and live to tell the tale. I graduated at the top of my class from that training, and we had so many tests. We had so many tests. I missed 4 questions the entire course.
How long?
4 months. And there were 3 individuals in the class who only missed 3 questions. They were all engineers and astrophysicists. So I felt pretty good about that. And the way I graduated at the top of the class was because they take the whole person. So like my grades absolutely mattered and I had to maintain a specific GPA to even be eligible. But then they look at like your leadership skills and other stuff. So yeah, I was really proud of that. And I learned a lot. And I thought that one was hard. And then the military sent me to another one. Like, oh my God.
So yeah, like, so this is all, you started off going to an RPA school or RPA,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Remotely piloted aircraft school. So your medical stuff gets you out of that. You get redirected over into this very, and you probably don't want to say what it is, but a very math heavy career field.
Yep.
With no, like, not only did you not go, like, it's not what your master's or your bachelor's degree is in. It's not STEM stuff at all.
I'd never had a math class in my life.
Yeah. So that's what I was getting at, is like, what was it, I guess, like for you to go from never really having a true math class or like, how was that going from like nothing into like, you're in a very, very high level mathematics course in tech school, learning very high level problems with like no foundation at all to pull from, like not even.
Yeah. So let's back up and tell people why I've never taken a math course, even though I have a bachelor's degree, and you have to have math credits to get that. Okay. So I taught myself everything I know about math beyond multiplication and division. That's how far Chris would take us. And then I was just handed textbooks and told to figure it out. So I taught myself algebra and trig. And at the time, that was all the state I lived in required to graduate high school.
Which is normal, yeah.
Back then it was. And then I went to college and I was in a five-year music program. It was a five-year Bachelor of Music, not Bachelor of Arts, Bachelor of Music. So it was like higher level. And we took so many music theory courses that they negated the math requirement. So I was a Bachelor of Music major for several years. And then a bunch of life stuff happened and I had to switch my major. And I was almost ready to graduate, except I needed a math course now suddenly. So I clept out of it. Like I barely passed the clep. Yeah. And at that point in my life, I wasn't talking about the cult. I was trying to be normal and not bring it up. And I didn't want people to know. Yeah. I didn't want people to know I had grown up in a cult. So it wasn't like I could ask for help. Like I grew up in a cult where no one taught me anything beyond multiplication and division.
Help.
So that's how I got through that. And then, I think I used Khan Academy, like for tech school, I had to like basically learn math, like for real. But I still wasn't talking about this stuff at that point in my life. I had one friend, who was an engineer who helped me. Like after class, I'd be like, all right, I got to learn this. Blah, what do I do? And he would either teach me or he would point me to other resources where I could learn everything. Cause it wasn't just math. It was engineering. I mean, it was a bunch of stuff. And so like, I don't remember really. I just studied so much during that time. I was just studying. And then the military sent me to another course that had a test you had to – or, like, homework you had to do before the course even started. And that, like, you had to know how to do it. Like, that was how they evaluated if you could be in that course. And, oh, that course was required for my job. I had no option but to learn. So there was this really lovely captain in my squadron at the time, and she was an astrophysicist. I forget if she already had her master's, or I think she had her master's degree in astrophysics. And she said that some of the stuff we were doing was like homework that she did, like graduate level astrophysics. And I know, you know, this is not my background. Thank you, cult. Don't be a female in a cult. Really do not recommend. So at this point, you know, I was quite a bit older and it was embarrassing, but I just didn't care because I wanted to succeed and I didn't want to let my unit down. And so I just went to her and I leveled and I was like, I don't know how to do this. I think I teared up a bit because I was just like, this is the thing that has haunted me because it's something I wanted to be really, really good at. Like, everything I know now, if I could have a redo, I would get a bachelor's degree in physics. Like, I actually really like it. And I was okay at it too. Like, after someone actually taught me, instead of just having to teach myself everything. And so I explained everything to her and she was like, all right, we're going to get you through this. So she had 5 days to get me up to that level of capability. And she's incredible because we did it and I passed all of the tests. I didn't get a single question wrong, I think, in any of the tests we had to take for that class. And there wasn't an official DG, but the commander like named me the top graduate at the end of it, the commander of the schoolhouse. And again, it was a combination of like whole person leadership skills, test scores, all that kind of stuff. It's crazy how not having a really good foundational education can haunt you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like life was like, cool, let's make you do everything you're afraid of.
Yeah.
But again, I think it was good for me. Like, I've learned a couple million times over in my life, I can do hard things. And and they still stress me the fuck out. Kyle would know.
Yeah. And, you know, as we're talking through all of this, I think you're smarter than I am. Like, just being honest with myself here, like, you're smarter than I am. And I've, you know, I work in cybersecurity now, but I started off in electrical engineering, which is pretty math heavy. It's not physics level, but like, it's, I did some crazy math shit in there. And, you know, I actually enjoy math. And so I've taken a lot of math classes through public school and college and, and was in STEM programs and still do have a STEM degree, a couple of them. And I don't think the average person would have been able to do what you did, like coming up out of the environment you came out of. Like, I don't personally, I feel like a normal cult kid or a normal IQ cult kid coming in, I don't think would have succeeded as well as you had and would have adapted as well as you did. Like, just like contextually for everybody else listening, like, I think this is just kind of a testament to how smart you are. Cause I saw some of the astrophysics stuff you did and you like knocked it out. And I was like, I don't think I could have picked this up, and you picked it up rather quickly, like within a night, and could figure that stuff out. And I was just looking at it like, this is crazy shit. Like, I don't, it would have taken me a lot longer to like pick it up and run with it.
Well, I didn't have a choice.
Well, you didn't, but it's still something. Like, I know you, it was do or die for you, but you know, that's hard. It was very hard stuff. Like, those were not easy math problems.
No, they were not.
So
felt amazing to solve them, but it was like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Like, please excuse my dear Aunt Sally.
Mm-hmm.
That captain was the first person who ever told me that in my life.
Yeah, and I
like learned, order of operations.
I remember sitting in math class, and it was probably seventh grade when I heard that one. Yeah, it would have been seventh grade.
I was 32.
Yeah, so I mean, like that. I mean, that's a prime example. It's like those. You know, when you have an actual math teacher, they teach you those things. Mm-hmm. Or
I mean, I was learning stuff. I mean, it was really sad because no one ever like taught me this stuff, but also I got to sit there for 4 months and I was like, this is so cool. Oh, that's how that works. This is amazing. I had to do an electrical engineering portion and I loved it. It was my favorite part of the whole course.
So outside of math, were there other subjects that you encountered like in the military that was hard for you to pick up on, as far as school subjects go?
There was a portion of electrical engineering that was a pretty significant mind fuck, but I think it's like that for everyone. It's like dark magic. But I don't know. I think I was just so fascinated and so curious that smoothed the path for everything. I mean, I learned so many things I didn't know. and there was a lot of grief. Like, I remember being on the phone with my friend and, like, while I was in tech school, the first really STEM course I went through. And I did a lot of grieving over my childhood. Like, I think education is powerful. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is power. Like, education has changed my life and changed my options in life. And I mean, yeah, I remember crying to my friend, like, I would have made such different choices in my life had I been properly educated. I probably would have gone to school for physics. Mm-hmm. Or electrical engineering. And that's, you know, that was a really hard thing to grieve and come to terms with. These days, I'm happy with where my life is headed. I'm pursuing a PhD. Like, yeah, I had to do a lot of remedial work on my own and with people who were kind enough to help me, like that captain, like my friend who was an electrical engineer. But I'm still achieving my higher education dreams. So yeah, it's sad how particularly being female in that environment is such a handicap later on if you get out mm-hmm. of a cult and want to do something more with your life than sit at home and make meals for someone.
So I feel like I could ask questions about this all day.
All right, keep going. And we
could keep going on this. A question I have is, would you recommend, like, if there's anybody else listening to this, it's like coming out of a cult or some sort of oppressive environment, or maybe even has a violent, you know,
or has child, violence in their background.
Yeah. Like a violence in their background. Like, would you recommend they go into the military?
Not right away. So here's what I realized. I went from a cult to a hyper-conservative Christian college that was just as bad as a cult, into the military, which is, while it's not a cult, it's still like, well, unless you're in the Marine Corps, then it's absolutely a cult. But it's a very restrictive environment. Mm-hmm. And then when I medically retired, that was, I had such an existential crisis. So I woke up the next morning after my retirement and I was like, This is the first time in my life that I get to pick what I want mm-hmm. without any external forces controlling that. And I'm still getting used to it. And I've been out for over a year, like what, a year and a half now?
Yeah.
And so I would say if you grew up in a cult or a really oppressive environment, just make sure you have some time to make your own choices.
Be free for a little bit.
And be free. I'm not saying go make bad choices or, mm-hmm. you know, but go be an adult for a little bit. But yeah, you'd probably kick ass in the military because there are a lot of things that are not going to faze you. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have that headspace to focus on doing really well instead, because you're not like, oh my God, someone's screaming at me and no one's ever done that before in my life, mm-hmm. which was true for some of the cadets that I went through OTS with. They were using a lot of brain space to cope with, you know, that fog of war. Mm-hmm. Whereas I just, like, I got to devote all my brain space to doing real well. Because I had built in, unfortunately, I had built in mechanisms, so it just bypassed all of that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're used to a really regimented lifestyle, then yeah, you'd probably excel in the military.
So what was it like for you to get into the military and then have these people that are around you that actually want to help you succeed? As opposed to your childhood where everybody's like trying to prevent you from succeeding, or like you, like pigeonholing you into like this thing. Like, you're going to be a stay-at-home mom and that's it. You're not going to learn anything else because you don't need it. So what was it like going into an environment and I'm just guessing here, but my understanding is in the military, like, you very much learn that like what's the phrase? The rising tide lifts all boats. Like, yeah. Is that a normal?
All ships rise.
Yeah.
I mean, I think ideally that's how it is. Unfortunately, there are a lot of politics and, you know, still there's a lot of backstabbing among junior officers, which I don't agree with and didn't participate in. I believe in peers supporting peers. But what it was like to suddenly be rooted for. So in Christian college, when I had to change my major, I switched it to like theology and philosophy, and the almost entirely male faculty told me I was wasting my time because I couldn't go to seminary because women can't be pastors. So why would I want to study that? And like some of them would purposefully give me bad grades, like trying to discourage me. It was very misogynistic, very, there was a lot of discrimination. And so I didn't really have people who were rooting for me in college. There was one person my senior year, there was a woman who really believed in me and tried to give me opportunities. That's when I started teaching sexual assault prevention and response, actually. It was under her. She was the one who started opening doors for me to teach faculty and staff how to be trauma-informed. And this was back before trauma-informed was really a buzzword. This was ages ago. So she was really the only one. And then I got in the military and it was like everyone in my leadership was rooting for me. And they gave me amazing opportunities. And I mean, I worked my ass off. It was not like, here, it's easy. I mean, a lot of it was really hard. And there were, you know, I was trying to figure out things like face shots and just navigating politics in DC and being sent to the Pentagon all alone as a second lieutenant who didn't know anything. So it was a lot, but they all believed in me. They all gave me really good, interesting, hard jobs. I mean, I'm not going to talk about it here, but some of my job titles, like, they still blow my mind looking back on it. And I was just so lucky. I was so, so lucky to primarily work for phenomenal people who took good care of me and gave me opportunities to succeed and believed in me and coached me and encouraged me and taught me how to handle some of the politics of it all. And like, you know, we talk a lot about, oh, being in a cult made me good at the military. And there, that's true. But also the people who mentored me and just kind of walked the military road next to me, they are the best part of my military service. And it wasn't just people who outranked me. Like, there were wonderful, wonderful folks who actually worked for me or I outranked them. They didn't necessarily always work for me, but I outranked them, who taught me so much. And I love them all and I miss them all. And my job was really cool, but that's not why I miss the military. I miss my people. I feel very lucky that I got to work with some really incredible folks. Yeah.
So what was it like for you to, or like, how did it feel to like get into this environment? And obviously you get your, what do they call it? MOS in the Air Force, your
AFSC,
your, yeah. So you get your job assigned to you pretty much. And like, this is what you do. But I know you had a bunch of like add-on duties that you like volunteered for. So like, what was it like to like, you know, you get into this environment and like, here's your job, but also like, there are other opportunities if you so choose to do that. Like, what was it like to have that option and say like, oh, well, I can also do all these other things because it's an option.
And it was an option because I had such supportive leadership, who approved. Like, I did a ton of speaking engagements for the military around sexual assault prevention and response, resilience, suicide prevention, just basically mental health intervention. And I loved it. And I loved helping my brothers and sisters in arms grapple with those topics. But it was really possible because my leadership was so supportive and they were like, yep, we'll make time for you to go do this. We'll find a way. And so I really appreciate that.
Did it feel weird to like have options, or were you just so excited to like teach that stuff that
No, it never felt weird to have those options. I think, I feel like I took a lot of it in stride.
I was guessing that's what you were going to say, because I feel like sometimes that's what happens with you, is you're so excited about things like the nuance to why kind of passes you by, and you're just like, you're so excited, you just go.
I guess. Yeah. I have to think about it.
Well, that's good. I mean, I know you loved your time in the military, and I'm glad you got all of those options, and you're still continuing with that stuff today. So that hasn't stopped.
Yeah, I still have a lot of connections. In terms of speaking engagements, I do a lot of training for the military and professionally. You know, the part where I don't swear all the time. And I love that. I love that those doors are still open and I can still hang out with military people who understand my acronyms.
Yep. I think I speak for everyone when I say thank you for your service.
It was
and
the greatest honor of my life.
Yep.
I miss it.
And thanks for sharing your story. And it is very, it's a very interesting connection, if that's the right word, between, you know, cults and the military and how that impacted you and how it prepared you or didn't prepare you. But I think we ran through a good bit of stuff there, and
I'm sure we could sit here and come up with stuff for like 3 more hours. But I think the bottom line is like, yeah, the hierarchy of a cult, how regimented it was, the oppression, the screaming, the yelling. Mm-hmm. There were so many things that just made the military normal to me. Still don't join a cult to get ready to go into the military. Like I want to be very clear. Don't join a cult. But if you're thinking about joining the military and you're someone who comes from an oppressive background, just know that I guess it could go either way. It could be very triggering or it could be very empowering. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't know why it wasn't triggering for me. It was just very empowering for me to take skills that came from a really dark time in my life and utilize them to accomplish something I really wanted to do and cared so much about.
Well, like I said, thank you again for your service and thanks for spending time talking about all that stuff. I know it's probably hard to dig into that and
mostly just the embarrassing moments.
Well, either way.
Stuff I didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh, and then there was one time I replied all to an email accidentally. That had nothing to do with the cult. That was everywhere else I worked before did not have reply all as the default. You had to like specially select that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that version of Outlook had reply all as the default. So a lot of people gave me a lot of shit about that for a really long time. Fortunately, it was a benign email I sent, thank God. And yeah, I did a lot of calling people on their bullshit around harassment.
I can imagine.
And that was fun.
I think the one story you haven't told.
Oh, no.
That I know keeps you up at night is a time you got in trouble after you were done with training.
What?
It had to do with, I think, your hat.
Oh, I didn't get in trouble. That's why I was like, what? I never got in trouble. I was trying to walk out of the squadron and hold the door open because my commander and a bunch of other people who outranked me were walking toward me and salute at the same time because we were outside. So you have to salute, but you're also supposed to hold the door. And it was just a real bad jumble. And it was real bad. Thank you for reminding me of that, Kyle. That had nothing to do with the cult.
So not bad.
But my commander, fortunately, just kind of looked at me and I was like, huh. And then he just kept going. I was like, thanks. Now I'm going to remember that one tonight in the middle of the night. I'm going to wake you up. You're going to have to suffer with me. I had managed to forget all about that, Kyle.
I'm surprised by that because you've mentioned it so many times that that's what keeps you up. And I'm like, that is the least bad thing that I could think of. If that was the worst thing I did on active duty was fumble around trying to hold a door and salute at the same time, I would call that great success.
So the day I accidentally replied all, I was at the bad colonel's office and I told the captain exec, and she was like, hey LT, if that is the worst thing you ever do as a lieutenant, that ain't bad. Mm-hmm. You're fine, I promise. It's okay.
All right, well, that wraps up our episode on the military and the cult, and we'll be back next Monday.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Cult I Left Behind.
Until next time, don't join a cult.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please like, share, and subscribe, and we will catch you on the next episode.